Amanda never got pregnancy cravings, so I never really got to benefit from the weird foods that you would want in the middle of the night.
Yeah, did you have pregnancy cravings?
Yes, I did.
What's here?
Stupid. So I am a big Anthony Bourdain fan. May he rest in peace. I saw him eat pickled razor clams on the TV.
I said,
I want that. And I would just like shake and sweat and think about pickled razor clams. And I have never had a pickled razor clam. Still to this day have not had them.
Wow.
But
okay.
I had to
Where do you even
it.
Acquire a pickled razor clam?
I don't know.
Where
I haven't found them.
Because he's usually around the world.
Right. I sent Michael to Whole Foods.
Nothing?
To look for them. No.
I don't really like clams, and I don't really like pickled things. So
I don't like pickled things.
I don't feel like putting
but
this
together. I do
together.
Like clams.
How do you feel about razors?
Now we're talking.
Right.
All right. Welcome back to the Beyond Sunday podcast. We're exploring how to take our faith beyond Sunday morning. This is Patrick Nazaroff with me, as always, Pastor David Bowser.
How are we doing, Patrick?
And Elise McCarter.
Still here. Still pretty successful.
And all three together.
Reunited.
Here in studio.
Yeah. Group air hug.
Yep.
COVID times.
We're in the same room.
I know. That's a nice gesture.
Thank you. Yes.
I don't think the CDC is out there like, you know what? Take off the mask. No hugs. Air hugs only.
The CDC says you can now refuse hugs based right. on your vaccination status.
Right. Those are great memes, by the way.
Yeah. Yeah, the CDC definitely recommends you pass on beyond Sunday to your friends and family. That's the cure for what ails you.
Yep, that's right.
Yes, I had COVID last week.
You did. Yeah.
Did you binge all of our old episodes? Is that how you passed your time?
I did not.
Quitter.
Yeah.
I played on my Switch and I took naps. That's what I did.
Yeah.
That's really kind of it. And my wife took care of our house.
And your two-year-old.
And slowly it was like, you know what? Kind of envious of the COVID guy. A little bit wish I had COVID,
right.
I think.
COVID envy. That's right. This is a new right. new diagnosis.
We've turned
coming
a corner here.
Like, oh, you just get to take a nap whenever you want?
Right.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Like, that sounds really tough for you.
Right. You know, like, I'm so sorry. You and your sniffles and your tiredness.
Yes. Not too bad, if you're wondering. I'm mostly mild symptoms, mostly fatigue.
I'm glad that you had mostly mild symptoms.
Mostly mild symptoms.
We
yes.
are relieved for you.
We will send Kat a care package accordingly.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. It is funny. Right before our podcast that came out, right before the new year, you know, I was saying, this is my year.
Mm-hmm.
Immediately get COVID.
Yep.
that's what you get.
2022 put Patrick
right.
in his place.
Yep. It did.
Of the new
Let
year.
Me smack you down a few
right.
notches here.
Pretty much. I think I like tested positive like on January 2nd, you know, like right away, like immediately.
You're like the little whack-a-mole. You just popped your head up just for long enough to go boom, right back in. And I go, okay, I'm sorry. I'm back in my place now.
Yep.
Yes. So yeah, great job last week with Carrie.
Well, yeah, I was glad to have her on.
Yeah. Well, we were. I mean,
the alternative was me shouting into the microphone for an hour, however long this is.
You sounded excited about that when we talked about it.
About the possibility of shouting?
Yeah,
I don't need permission. Yeah,
right.
I do that anyway, but I don't know that other people need to hear it all the time.
Yeah. Yeah, so thank you to Carrie, and that may be something we do in the future.
Yeah, I titled it a series on our release, so now we're bound to do it again at least once.
Yeah. We can call out, you know. Yeah. Sick or just go to lunch or something.
Or I
one
can
day.
Call out and some. You guys can do interviews too. You can
That's
talk
true.
To people.
Yeah,
That's true.
Maybe
right.
people have questions they want to ask you.
We'll see.
That feels doubtful. I don't. But that was. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Yeah. Yeah, usually in church people ask me questions. It's sometimes like, where's Pastor David?
Do
you know when he's going to be
back? Do you know
back?
Where the restroom is?
So those are usually the questions. Yeah, so.
Can you volunteer for this committee?
No, Patrick doesn't get to volunteer. I
don't get volunteer. I get voluntold for
That's
a committee
right.
sometimes.
Yeah.
So, you know,
Patrick's told this is part of other duties as assigned
right,
to be on this committee. Yeah.
All right. So we are going to be talking about a year in review.
All right.
Not from us.
We're not reviewing our year. We're just going to go through.
Well, it's not our review, I guess.
What were the best parts of our podcast right. last year?
It's Barna's review.
Oh. Are we giving them a review? How did Barna do?
Yeah, it's like an employee evaluation.
All right, Barna. I'd like
we
you
can
to
do
come
our
in and
thumbs
have a seat.
Up at the end of this episode. And who do we want to play
Let's
Barna?
Talk about your goals, Barna.
In the movie version of Barna Research and whatever they do, you know.
That's what they do. Barna
Research.
They
call people. What is that called?
Research?
No.
Survey?
Survey. You know, for some reason, I want to say profiling. And I was like,
They probably do that too.
That's not what it is, but yeah, it's something like that.
I don't remember. Will Arnett. That's who should play Barna.
I love it.
Yeah.
Will Arnett?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'd talk to him if he called me.
I would, yeah.
So, like,
I would also give him an employer review if he sat in this chair right now. I've got a chair next to me with a microphone and everything. Come on in, Will.
Great. Maybe he'll be on our interview series. We're saying it now. Put it out in the universe. Will Arnett. call our shot. Start
cold calling all the celebrities we can think of to get him. Somebody's going to say yes.
Just we still need Simone Biles. Somebody's, we said that a long time ago.
Email willarnett@gmail.com. willarnett1@gmail.com. Will Arnett, there we go.
The real Will Arnett.
Will.arnett. One of them's got to be his, okay?
We got this. 2022 is looking up.
Yep.
Yeah. Before we get to Barna's year in review, got some news.
Oh, okay. The news.
Yes. Do you like TV?
Yeah.
Sure.
Like the actual device, the television, or like watching television?
Yeah, that's what you use it for, okay? Like, do you like that there's a big box in your house?
I don't know.
What else do you do with your
TV? I just want to know what the question is. Like, do I like the technology of television? Yes. Do I enjoy watching it?
Do you enjoy watching? I'm going to guess it's do you enjoy watching TV?
Yeah, do you enjoy watching TV?
So I don't really watch live TV anymore, but I do watch things on my TV.
Okay.
Just say yes, okay?
This is more fun.
Do you like food?
I do. That I do. Yeah. But I do. Not like pickled food. Razor clams.
And you like, Pastor David, you like cooking shows.
I do. This is like, the triple threat for me. Sure. What do we got?
I think this is some technology you might be interested in.
Okay.
Japan. Well, I was going to say Japanese, but it's not what it says. Japan pioneers TV you can taste with new lickable screen.
Oh, boy.
This is straight out of Willy Wonka. You remember this? He had the thing where you could like lick the wall and you could taste all the stuff. Yep. And then they had the other thing where you could like be in the TV. The little boy got lost inside the TV.
That's right.
My TV.
Yep.
My
TV. Really a horror film.
It really
masquerading.
Is.
Masquerading.
As a child's movie.
Right.
Yeah. Either way, this is straight out of Willy Wonka. All right. What do they got? So we're going to taste. Uh-huh. We're going to lick the screen and we're going to taste what they're cooking.
Yeah.
I'm a little concerned about this.
So there's a meal on screen.
I'm going to say this.
I want those razor clams.
Right.
Let me go lick the TV.
I'm going to say this right now. This is one display model I will not be purchasing.
Right.
Yep.
Like, how do you share it? Like, how do you have a family TV? Are all y'all licking the same TV?
The family that lives together.
You have to have
the CDC TV. Recommends.
TVs. Yeah.
You only lick the TV of direct family members. Right.
Yes, exactly. That is good safe practices. Yeah.
A Japanese professor has developed a prototype lickable TV screen that can imitate food flavors. Another step. Two quarts creating a multi-sensory viewing experience. Yeah.
What?
That is one sense that I've never thought to myself. I want this movie to be enhanced by me being able to taste.
Right. You know,
even
or
when I'm watching cooking shows, I'm like,
you could just go do the thing, like for real. You could go eat the food.
Yeah, razor clams.
Right.
Sometimes it's easier said than done. Okay. Like that's what we're saying.
Okay.
Yes. The device called Taste the TV uses a carousel of tin.
It's not a very original name.
Flavor canisters.
A little on the nose.
It's workshopping it.
Okay.
It
uses carousel.
Tin flavor canisters that spray in a combination to create the taste of a particular food.
Like an ink cartridge.
Yes. The flavor. Yeah. You need to replace your.
I just like envisioning like squeezable cheese. Like. Yes.
The flavor sample then rolls on hygienic film over a flat TV screen for the viewer to try. It's hygienic. It says so right there.
All right.
I don't know if it's like a,
so there's
like
a conveyor belt.
And then you just like tear that off and throw it away.
Yeah, so you're not licking the screen. You're licking something that like conveyors itself over the screen.
Sure.
Okay. This is marginally not as gross as I thought it was. Not going to do it. But
your screen is over the projected image. So it's a screen. It's just not the TV screen.
Okay. All right.
How does this like?
Whatever
do you
happened,
just like walk up to your TV and lick it?
Where else? How else are you
like,
going to do you have to crawl?
Like,
do you have to? Like, what's
do
the question?
Do you like take something off and take it back to your seat and lick it in your
you
seat?
You get the
like,
hygienic strip and you take it back. And
I mean, I think I really think if you really wanted this to work, you've got to have this like on your phone and you just lick your phone. Because like the image on the screen, you're like, oh, let me
sync up with your phone.
Because I'm not walking to the screen and like just licking the TV like I'm a dog on a window. I mean, like
your spouse walks in on you licking your TV. How do you explain this one?
Well, honey, taste the TV. It's a new Japanese technology. Right. The goal is to make it possible for people to have the experience of something like eating at a restaurant on the other side of the world, even while staying at home.
Sure.
Hey, it's perfect for COVID.
There you go.
Perfect.
Yeah. So there you go. Are you interested in a lickable TV?
I'm good.
No.
Yeah, this is
I would take a TV that like instantly made me the food that was like...
I don't think that's a TV anymore.
That's what I want.
That's an oven. It's like an Easy Bake oven.
That's yeah.
But
Eats.
I want it to do all this stuff.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, that's... I mean, maybe that should be an app on your phone.
Yeah.
Like, oh, there's a food on my TV.
I want that.
I want to press
Where
a button
can I get that?
And somebody brings it to
right.
me.
Trademark. We got that's Beyond Sunday. Anybody out there who makes that, that's us. Right. You got to give us credit and money.
I did see recently, like a couple months ago, that George Jetson was born
on
Yeah,
you
like,
shared that on the pod.
This year.
Yeah, we
We celebrated his birthday.
Theoretically, we're not that far away it's from... Coming.
Was he know? Licking the screen?
Yeah.
I don't remember that Maybe. In yeah. the Jetsons, but you know, it's been a while since I've
right.
seen yeah. him.
Sure.
All right.
It was the 70s.
So on the demonstration, the student told the screen she wanted to taste sweet chocolate. That's everywhere. Okay, you don't need to get that from your TV.
Right.
After a few tries, an automated voice repeated the order and Flavor Jet spritzed a sample onto a plastic sheet. It's kind of like milk chocolate, she said. It's sweet like a chocolate sauce. So, you know, does it even work? Maybe.
Cool. Yep. We almost got the taste of kind of chocolate sauce. Right. There we go. Yep.
Yeah, and I think, again, that's going to be one of those ones that should be relatively easy. Pickled yeah. razor clams on your TV, that's going to be, you're using all 10 of your flavor combinations
right.
to bring that up.
Yeah, for sure.
Or you're going to have to download like an add-on of like extra flavors to
yeah.
get
one
that
of the
out
cans
there.
Should really just be chocolate sauce. Like that should have been
right.
One, yeah,
that's
for sure.
One of the 10.
It's yeah. one of the 10. Because
usually when I'm watching TV, the one thing I want is like
chocolate.
Something that's dessert. You know, yeah, like yeah. something.
I want one can that's chocolate sauce. I want one can that's like potato chips. And yeah,
just salt.
Yeah, just that's fine. Yep.
Just a thing. Just throw salt on your TV screen and you just lick it off.
I'd be okay with that. Yeah.
What a world. Mm-hmm.
There you go. Well, you know, the future is now.
There you go.
You know, when I was a kid, it was like, our car is going to be flying in the
right.
future. Nope.
Like, can we lick our
can
TVs?
Can we lick our TVs?
Yep. There you go.
That's what our...
You know, once upon a time, I was always told that I wasn't supposed to be that close to the TV. Is that
yeah.
not a thing anymore?
Is it
good for us to be that close to the TV?
I think you're staring at a screen, like, for 80% of your day. So at this
yeah.
point,
yeah.
like, it is what it is.
Yeah.
My eyes are already damaged forever.
Yeah.
Okay. Well.
Eat your carrots.
Okay. I like carrots. Get my keratin.
You could lick it off your TV.
Yeah.
Wow.
Maybe that's one of the cans.
Yeah.
It's the orange color.
The carrot can. The carrot flavored canister. All right. Year in review.
Mm-hmm.
Barna's top 10 releases.
Let's welcome Will Arnett to the studio.
Of 2021. Okay, so this is Barna Research mm-hmm. Has published, like, here's kind of snippets
okay.
from their top 10 reviews of last year. Or not reviews, of, like, their research.
Their survey okay. results.
Mm-hmm. And we'll go through, we'll spend some time on some of these. We probably won't get to all 10.
That's fine.
One of these we actually covered in depth.
Oh.
I don't know if you knew that.
Yeah,
totally did 100%. When
Absolutely.
We get there, I'll tell you. And
I mean, I'll probably remember it when we get to it.
Yeah, yeah. We'll see.
Maybe.
Number mm-hmm. one, 38% of pastors have thought about quitting full-time ministry over mm-hmm. this past year.
Over the past, yeah. So within like 2020 to 2021 is when that was taken.
And that is a rise at January of 2021. So a year ago, mm-hmm. it was at 30%. So it rose about 10% over the year.
Yeah. So it's rough, man. It's
yeah.
real. You know, and ministry is always hard. We know that. But COVID and a lot of the other stuff that have been going on have really put additional stress on pastors and leaders and the relationship between pastors and congregational mm-hmm. leaders. And it's mm-hmm. been really, really hard for a lot of people. Division or differences of opinion, differences of things like that between pastors and leaders have been historically challenging no matter
sure.
what. But this has been exceptionally hard. And people are much more vocal and violent implies physical, but verbally violent in their reactions to things. I mean, I've even talked to pastors who I would say serve conservative congregations. I know they serve conservative congregations and are themselves conservative, who say, I can't talk about Jesus. Like, I can't talk about the words that Jesus says without somebody accusing me of being political. And I'm like,
wow.
And these are people who, like, I've voted for Republican my entire life, and yet I'm being accused of this, that, and the other because I'm saying Jesus said to care for the poor. And, like, that's just the world that we live in right now. That's a really tough place to be. I'm feeling very fortunate that that's not the setting that I serve in.
Yeah, I think we're definitely entering...
Present company excluded.
You know, I think this rise, and again, this is close to...
Hold a minute. That was an insult. We need to give that its due acknowledgement.
I was just implying that you were the reason I thought about quitting. That's fine.
Don't look your TV. Okay. Right.
Eat your carrots.
So we're looking at over the last year, 4 out of 10 pastors thought about quitting their jobs. You know, and probably not like, oh, geez, I want to quit this job. But serious consideration given to this.
And with no other plan. Like, not like, oh, I want to quit this job to take another call. These are pastors like, I'm quitting to get out of ministry.
Oh, yeah. Right. Yeah. This is leaving full-time ministry. Yep. So not like, I need to leave this group of people. I'm done with them.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I like the job still. Yeah. So I think, you know, part of that is what you're saying. This like kind of a very vocal political atmosphere that we're living in. And probably regardless of what side you fall on politically, it probably is pretty challenging when you have a very vocal minority within your congregation telling you you're constantly doing it wrong.
Mm-hmm. Even harder when you have a vocal majority telling you you're constantly doing it
wrong. For sure.
Yeah.
I think in that situation, you probably just leave.
It's not a good fit. Creative differences.
But I mean, if you're super conservative and the congregation is mostly conservative, but there's a very vocal minority speaking about like, these are all the, unfortunately, COVID protocols we should be doing. I don't know why this is political, but it is. Or vice versa. That is incredibly challenging and incredibly difficult. I know here, even at our church, we had some very vocal difference of opinions from a lot of different political points of view that did lead to some people saying, like, I think my church home just can't be here anymore. And leaving. And that's really difficult and really hard, especially, I'm sure, for most pastors, like, there's nothing I really could have done differently.
Yeah.
And I think that's the hardest part of like, I look back on my interactions, my persona, how I handled the situation, and there was just nothing that could have been done differently.
Right.
And this was the outcome.
Yep.
And that is not only like emotionally and spiritually distressing. I mean, I'm sure that's like heartbreaking, like hard to say like, and now I have to continue doing what I do, knowing that this might happen again, this cycle might repeat itself in 2022, you know, and that's really difficult.
For sure.
Other reasons you think pastors have said, you know, 4 out of 10 pastors have seriously consideration into quitting.
I mean, some people in those in that survey is going to be natural retirement and things like that. I think it's really the 10%, you know, the growth.
Uptick.
Yeah, the uptick. I think that's where we want to focus our energy. Yeah, I mean, ministry is just hard right now. Yeah. Finances are hard. Some places can't afford to pay pastors what they need to survive. You know, there are a lot of places where pastors can't afford to be getting rent and their student loans and everything else that they're expected to do. That's really tough. People are it's a hard time to be in ministry, for sure.
Yeah, I think for a lot of ministry programs out there, and we can say we at Lord of Life has experienced this. I've experienced this in my youth program. COVID hit us hard. You know, like, attendance dropped. We switched to more online stuff. We did our best and attendance dropped in the middle of this. And even like, I felt like we were doing a fairly decent job of providing online content and we still lost people. Those churches out there who are like, you know, pastors anything, who are 60 plus, were like, I don't even understand how any of this works. You know, and like, and so like, they're not even able to kind of keep up with the demand. And like, and seeing ministries drop and now thinking of like, and I have no idea how to get a, how to like, in some ways, like build it back. And I think that'd be like, you know what? I don't think I really want to do that anymore. Maybe when I was fresh out of seminary, I had the energy, the stamina, the passion to say like, give me, a, you know, 50 faithful and we'll grow and we'll do what we can do. Because like, I just want to, I just don't have that in me anymore. You know, especially as ministry is evolving. And I'm not really able or ready to evolve with it.
Yeah. You know? I would think if you were already on the fence a little bit, that that need to completely shift would be even more challenging, you know? I'm glad I didn't have to do it. You both did.
It is challenging. It has definitely challenges. So, Pastor Dave, are you in the 4 out of 10%?
No, I'm not. I'm good.
Good.
I've not considered permanently leaving ministry.
That's great.
In the last year.
About like a vacation.
Are you implying something here?
You said you permanently.
You sure you don't want to take a little break?
Right. Looking a little rough around the edges.
But I think what is also interesting is this was also their most popular story this last year. Like this information was what most drew people traffic on their site.
I mean, you know, who's visiting Barna's site on the regular?
Fair enough.
Pastors.
Well, yeah. And it probably is driven by pastors who see this and share this to their congregations right. to say, hey, stop being jerks to your pastor. Like, you know, just be aware. Like, this is really hard on pastors. Yeah. I mean, you're just in the same way that you've seen all sorts of articles about how this has been extremely difficult on, you know, healthcare workers, on first responders, on, you know, people who were considering essential or whatever. You know, kind of sharing that piece to get people's attention to it. Because in a lot of ways, right, you know, people, we talked about this a little bit last week with Carrie, people often bring their worst selves to the church unintentionally, right? Yeah. And, you know, they've got all these relationships out in the world that they're trying to maintain and trying to stay healthy, and they know that the church is going to love them no matter what, and so they don't always bring their best selves into the space. And someone takes the toll of that, and very often it's the pastor, especially in smaller congregations where, you know, they maybe don't have a full staff, or they don't, you know, they're the one person who's doing everything. And so when the audio doesn't work on a Sunday morning, it's the pastor's fault. Or when the Facebook Live drops the stream, which they may or may not be able to control at all, it's the pastor's fault. When they need to research how to get faster internet at the church in the middle of nowhere, right? That's the pastor's responsibility. Mm-hmm. That's a lot. And it all, you know, in many places, it comes down to them. And so I could see them sharing that out and trying to get people to read about it in that context too.
Yeah.
So as opposed to people just like Googling Barna and being like, I want that.
Sure.
Yeah.
So if you are, you know, a member of a congregation, whether here at our church or elsewhere, let me ask this here. What should you do as just a member to support your pastoral or our ministry people? You know, what are the things that to make sure, you know, if you're like, I love our pastor, I love our staff, I don't want them to be in that 4 out of 10.
Yeah, sure.
What can I do to help them?
Yeah. I think one thing that you can do in any setting, right, is take the the buzz, right, whatever people are talking about, and always stand on the side of the pastor publicly, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, if you're out there and people are just like, oh, this person is terrible, I don't know, or they're grumpy or whatever they might be griping about, try to give the pastor the benefit of the doubt until you've had a direct conversation with that individual. Or until you've had a direct conversation with leadership who's in charge of that pastor's supervision, right? And you know, try to stand on the side of, I want to give the pastor the benefit of the doubt. I know that this is hard stuff that they're working through, and start there. I think that's really helpful. Think hard before you send helpful advice. I have been fortunate enough that this has not been something that I get a lot of, because we have really great tech people and things like that. If you're a member of a congregation and the pastor is struggling on Facebook or struggling on whatever, they probably don't need an email from you also telling them how they could be doing Facebook better. Like, that's
good life advice. They probably don't need that. Yeah. Just like in general, just think before you give somebody advice.
And and find ways to encourage them, right? Right.
Yeah.
Even if you're like really frustrated with stuff that's going on, right? Like maybe you're like, man, these sermons are rough and this tech is terrible and I don't feel connected. Find something that you feel like you can be positive about and send those notes. Send the notes that say, I'm really glad we did this. And just stop. Don't go on to say go on to say all the other stuff. Just say, I'm really glad we did this, and let that stand on its own, and then find a time for a conversation on the other things.
Yeah.
I think those are good things to do.
Yeah. Yeah, I think
also food never hurts.
Sure.
Unless they have an allergy, then it might. Right. So be careful.
Get them the taste of the TV technology.
There you go, yeah. Get them a taste of the TV.
Yeah. Yeah, I think quick with encouragement. I think that's you know, that's good life advice in most things, that you know, write your pastor a letter, a note, saying, or whatever staff person you interact with, saying like, I appreciate what you do and this is why.
Yep.
You know, like whatever that is. Quick with encouragement is always a big deal, because sometimes it can feel like, am I just speaking into the void?
Yep.
And does it even matter? I think that's probably a part of that reason that rise in 10% is a little bit of like, is what I'm saying even making a difference?
Yeah. And it's really, I mean, this is, you know, psychology stuff, right? It's way easier for us to focus on the one negative thing than all of the positive things that might be. So somebody comes up to you after worship and says one bad thing. You know, it takes like 10, 15, 20 people saying positive things for you to like think, okay, maybe that was... Maybe that one thing was the anomaly, right?
Yeah.
And so just know, like, you gotta help outweigh those things. Like, so before you say something rude to your pastor, say 15 nice things.
This is starting to feel a little self-serving.
Well, because probably, I hate to tell you, probably many church workers are hearing the one bad thing already.
Yeah.
Like that's already happening. Yeah, so
that information is probably not new.
So if you're like, I think that was a good sermon.
And in some cases, you might not be able to think of 15 nice things that you want to say. And so it might just let you have some time to just wait patiently and then decide I don't need to say anything at all. That's okay too.
Do your part. Say the one good thing is, you know.
Oh, yeah. You always start with the one good. But if you don't make it to 15, then...
then he'll be okay, is what he's saying.
All right.
he'll
let's
be
move
okay
on.
With 14.
Points 2 and 3 are related.
So, okay. All right.
Articles. So, number 2, State of the Bible, 2021, 5 key findings. There's really only one that they really highlight here in this mm-hmm. best of. And then 3, the U.S. cities most committed to weekly prayer and Bible reading.
So, I did dig into the number 3 a little bit.
I would say number 2 is actually kind of boring.
Yeah. My hometown is in the boring. Top 5.
Ooh.
Yeah, what was your hometown?
Greenville, South Carolina. Yeah.
I looked at that top. I think they put up the top 50.
Yeah.
And man, if it is not the buckle of the Bible, that like,
yeah.
Yeah.
I think there were like 3. There was one in the top 25 that was outside of the South, and it was somewhere in California. And then I think there were 3 or 4 in the next 25 of the 50 that were not like below the historical Mason-Dixon line.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just, yeah. Yeah.
It's not surprising. Like, to me, that's not surprising at all.
Yeah, I didn't like dig far enough to know like exactly what their standards were or what their metric was. Like, are they just polling people and say, do you read the Bible every day?
Right.
Like, if that's the question, then yeah, it's not surprising at all.
Yeah, but, and these are kind of like snapshots of like their deeper research. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so if you're curious, the top 5 cities in America when it comes to Bible reading, and I'll give you the percentages here.
Okay.
These are all 50,
what's the percentage?
58% or more engage with weekly Bible or
58%.
Prayer.
Of the people in this town or more engaged
in the
weekly.
Top 5.
Okay.
In the top 5. Yeah. And to call back, number 2 was the state of the Bible. It really was saying like about 50% of Americans engage with the Bible on some level, which is kind of about what it's been for the last 10 years.
Yeah.
So it's not really that exciting.
Yep.
Like, and about 29% of Americans don't engage with the Bible at all, which is a little bit lower than it was like a few years ago, but not that much.
And 27% of that 29% don't go to church every week. So.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, basically it's saying like, it's kind of like this year was about the same as any other year. Yeah. So nothing big. Yeah. All right. So the top 5, number 1 is Monroe, Louisiana.
Okay.
Which I have no idea where it is.
Nope.
And it's in
Northern
Louisiana.
They're really into the Bible down there in Monroe. So
it is in Northern Louisiana.
Number 1.
I know.
Yeah, 1, 2, 3 and a tie for 4th are really kind of in a straight line across the southern United States. It's pretty interesting. Maybe, I don't know if there's one road that connects all those cities.
I-10.
The Bible road is. It's not I-10.
North of I-10, but yeah.
Maybe I-20. Yeah. Montgomery.
I-10 is too populated.
Montgomery, Alabama. Mm-hmm. Tyler, Texas. Jackson.
Tyler, Texas isn't far from here.
Yeah, I had an accidental couples massage with somebody from Tyler, Texas. I wonder if he reads the Bible every day.
Good chance. There's a good chance that he is engaging with the Bible.
Sounds like a story for another time.
Is,
Jackson, Mississippi, and Macon, Georgia are the top are the top 5.
Wait, you didn't say Greenville. I thought
Greenville's 6.
Greenville's 6, I guess. I thought it was 5.
Yeah.
It's 6.
Just missed the cut.
It's
Come
in.
On, Greenville.
Yeah.
Pick it up.
I guess it's tied for 5th.
But they didn't get on the map.
Jackson and Macon are tied for 4th. Yeah.
Okay.
The top 50, that is pretty, pretty southern.
Yeah. Lots of Georgia. Lots of
Mississippi,
I think I saw in there a number of times. Some Arkansas, some Kentucky.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think that I can say,
I guess Kentucky
maybe
was technically a border state. They were neutral, and so
Here comes the Civil War. Okay, we've drawn them in. really the only ones that are like you would consider like not South is going to be Grand Rapids, Michigan,
which has a Bible college, a very prominent Bible college in Grand Rapids.
Yeah.
And maybe Wichita, Kansas, and Kansas City.
There's one in Washington. But it's in the very conservative part of Washington.
Okay. There's one in Washington, too.
Eastern Washington, so there, I think.
Yeah. Well, good memory on
Thank
there.
You.
It's like agricultural
Accuse
Washington.
Accuse me of not reading the information.
Yeah.
Right.
And that's
starting 2022 off a new leg. I'm going to read the
article.
Wow.
So 46 of 50.
Yeah.
Definitely
that's rough.
Would be considered South.
Not rough. It's just it's South. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, one in California. Bakersfield.
There you go.
Yeah,
so I think Indiana made it in there a couple times.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, my guess would be that this is denominationally tied as well.
I think so.
Have not historically been super charitable to the Southern Baptist Convention, but I do think one thing that one thing that they do well is an emphasis on reading the Bible.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, I would guess, that's a really prominent denomination in that area of the country.
How many, if we just ask people at Lord of Life, how many people do you think would answer? Like, if the question is, do you engage in the Bible weekly? That's the question, right? I feel like people order life would say yes to that.
What do you mean by engage in the Bible weekly?
Well, what do they mean by engage in the Bible
weekly? Yeah, are we sitting down and reading like a hard copy? Are we like
if I come to church,
engaging
is that,
in spiritual materials like podcasts that talk about the Bible or what?
Yeah.
I mean,
if you listen
go
to
church,
Sunday, you've now,
weekly prayer and Bible reading is what they would is what it's kind
weekly
of saying.
Prayer and Bible reading. Yeah. Okay.
So I don't know if that is outside of the context of Sunday morning,
yeah.
you know, or a small group or whatever, mm-hmm. you know,
yeah.
you know, you want to connect it to. So I don't know, you know, again, we're getting snapshots of things. Yeah. We're not doing a deep dive into any of these. Yeah. But yeah, I think definitely maybe the Southern Baptist, this is definitely more ingrained into a spiritual culture of like, you need to be doing this. Yeah, I think that's definitely part of it.
Yeah, I definitely agree, at least, that I think the Southern Baptists lift that up. I'm just really curious in how the question was phrased. If, you know, Lutherans,
right.
Catholics, et cetera, would have felt like they...
read the Bible on a daily basis.
Right.
Is
yeah.
kind of what I was
if they called up,
from.
If they called up the majority of Lutherans across the state or across the country and said, do you read the Bible on the daily basis? Our number would be low, absolutely.
Right.
But yeah. I'm just curious what we would say if they just called up Lutherans and said, do you engage in weekly Bible reading and prayer?
Well, yeah.
Probably.
Yeah,
and you know, there's always going to be definitely a percentage of these people that say yes because think the answer should be yes.
Sure. Like, yeah. yeah.
My pastor might get a hold of this survey. I better say yes.
Right.
Yeah. All right. Let's move on.
Okay.
Any other draws or things? By the way, Houston, Texas, not on the list. So
I'm not surprised that Houston. There weren't really any big cities on there.
Dallas is on there.
Oh, Dallas was? Okay. I missed
Dallas.
I'm not surprised that.
And New Orleans.
I'm not surprised that Dallas was on there over Houston.
I mean, Houston is the most diverse city in the world. So, I mean, I think that is going to be part of
a whole lot more people who have no interest in the Bible.
Yeah.
So
reading things other than the Bible.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
Harry Potter, perhaps.
I was thinking spiritual texts, but yeah.
We do not have how
some
many
people.
We do not have how many people read Harry Potter every day.
What's the overlay between the percentage of people having weekly engagement with Harry Potter and the percentage of people having weekly engagement with
the Unitarian Bible? Universalist Church up the street apparently does a VBS that is Harry Potter.
A Harry Potter VBS?
Yeah.
Okay.
I actually think that's pretty...
I was like, huh. I mean, I don't hate it.
Yeah. Patrick would go, for sure.
I mean, just don't call it VBS. If it's like Harry Potter camp, sure. Sounds fun.
You could use Harry Potter to talk about the Bible.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I don't think that they're
I'm just saying,
that,
but if you're not talking about the Bible, don't call it VBS.
Oh, sure.
Right.
Yeah, like, all right.
You think
J.K.
Rowling knows about that?
Yeah, well, I'm sure she's listening. Right.
Right. So now she does.
She's on it.
Yeah. Get her on the podcast. Sure. Yeah. Interview her. We got some questions for JK.
We do. Yeah.
I think the world has some questions for JK.
Yeah. And we're going to answer them on Beyond Sunday.
We could answer them for her.
Oh, I like
cut
that.
Out the middleman.
Okay. Yeah. Elise, you're going to play the part of JK.
Okay.
All right.
I've waited for this my whole career.
Number four, year out, how COVID-19 has impacted practicing Christians. This one is fine.
We're now experts. We're no longer practicing.
Basically, how satisfied are you with your life?
Meh.
Mm-hmm. Okay, you're
still
meh.
Got it.
I'm assuming that's where most people are.
We are more satisfied, just as satisfied, less satisfied. That's the three options that they were given.
Well, yeah, what else would you be? Does it
well, I mean,
it covers
I'm just,
all of it. Yeah.
Okay. Well, I'm just saying, you know.
More or less the same. Those are my options.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah. All U.S. adults versus practicing Christians.
Mm-hmm.
Christians on general are a little bit more satisfied
than
a little
all
bit,
U.S. adults
a little and a little bit less satisfied.
Okay.
But not really that like this is not like that dramatic of a difference.
Yeah.
But what's interesting here is close to 50% are less satisfied throughout the U.S.
Close to 50% of Christians in the United States are less satisfied?
Of all 46 of all U.S. adults, 42% of practicing Christians
are less satisfied.
Less satisfied over the last year. Huh? So
with their life this year versus last year.
Correct.
Okay.
I can see that.
Yeah.
I don't find that particularly surprising, but it is it's an interesting alignment between spiritual and non-spiritual.
And of all three, it is the biggest percentage. So, so that is.
Okay.
So, yeah, I think it's just kind of a trajectory of like, this year was really hard.
Yeah.
And if you're a Christian and you're thinking, wow, this is really hard, it's okay.
Yeah.
You're not alone.
And if you're not a Christian and you're thinking this was really hard,
you're probably not listening to this.
Yeah.
But you're not alone.
But you're not alone.
Glad
we
to
got
have
one.
Yeah. All right. Number five, encouraged, disappointed, connected, how churchgoers feel after worship. This one we covered on this podcast.
I remember this.
Yeah.
There you go. So we're just going to blast
through that.
All
right. Number six. This one's interesting here. Do multiracial churches offer healthy communities for non-white attendees?
Do multiracial churches offer healthy communities for non-white. Okay.
So, all like, right. Basically, are the multiracial churches doing a good job at being multiracial?
Yeah.
Yeah. There you go. That's the question. So, okay. So, because often.
Should have said it that way.
Oftentimes, you know.
Barna.
In terms of, like, Christian race relations with the world, you know, some of the answers are like, well, we got to diversify our specific place. And it's no shock that I think the American Christian church is probably the least diverse space on Sunday mornings.
Within the United States.
Within the United States, you know. That typically most people fall into going to a place of worship that looks like them.
Mm-hmm.
And so when...
Including currently all three of us.
Including all three of us. So when that breaks the mold, is it good for the non-white people?
Ah, yeah. I gotcha. Okay.
Or are we doing a good job?
Yeah.
Okay. So what do you think the answer is here?
I'm going to go with sometimes.
Yeah.
I'm going to sit right up on that fence post.
Yeah. I was going to say, I'm doubtful, but hopeful.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So, this is, you know, to Black practicing Christians on racial prejudice in the church. Mm-hmm. This is who they're polling to answer this question. I've experienced racial prejudice in my church. So, if you are a Black practicing Christian in a multiracial church, you're probably around close to 50% that you've experienced racial prejudice.
Within a multiracial church.
If you are in a monoracial church, you're close to 70%. So.
Hey, improvement.
20%.
Still not good.
It's, yeah. It's racial prejudice at all. We're
just really
churches.
Bad at stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I had a conversation with somebody once about like they had grown up with what's it called, like equality training and stuff like that, like racial sensitivity stuff and that sort of thing, and so they were, you know, refuting this trend in anti-racism training, saying why do we want to be anti-racism? Anti just makes people, everybody gets up on edge and think, I'm like, this is why we need to be anti-racism, because I'm okay being against racism,
right.
Like I'm okay with standing up in the church and saying, no, we're not going to tolerate that.
Right.
We're not going to let you continue to hold that particular, like, we're going to, yeah, we're going to be anti-racism. I'm okay with that. And I think a lot of churches sometimes were too nice to address the issues that are still very serious that need to be addressed. We're too nice to each other.
I think we just lump that in with other issues. Mm. Like, and it's not like we're being like anti-peanut butter and jelly sandwich. You know, it's anti, like,
excuse me,
hate crimes. You know, like, there are some things that you can draw a hard line on.
Yeah, it's okay to be anti something.
Yeah.
I'm anti-murder.
There we go.
Look at that. Well, are you going to be mad at me for having an anti-murder class?
I
can we have that?
Here's how you let other people stay alive.
Right.
Here's what you do.
How to not murder.
Step one, don't leave your house.
Right.
Well, I think this kind of challenges this belief of, like, you know, I can't be racist.
Yeah.
I have a Black friend.
Yeah. You know, I'm in a church with Black people.
Or like,
people,
we can't be racist in the church. We're multiracial in this space. So obviously it can't be true.
Yeah.
Well, here we have this percentage of a Black community saying, like, I've experienced this even in churches that are doing better.
Mm-hmm.
They're doing their part to create a racial diversity as a church. It still can be present.
Yep.
And so I think it just reminds us that, like, that you can't reach an end and say, like, because we have a veneer, it's fixed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, there's still effort to be done, even if we're doing good.
Right.
So, like, that still doesn't absolve us from kind of guilt. So
this is, like, we've recently learned that there are a lot of things that our previous homeowners just kind of, like, painted over. And now they're, like, revealing themselves 5 years later.
Yeah.
It's kind of the same thing. Like, you can't just slap a new coat of paint on it and call it fixed.
Right.
Like, sometimes you got to rip the drywall out and replace it. And there are some places where we need to rip out the drywall.
Yeah. Yeah. And in many ways, it can be like, you know, for example, if the CEO of Exxon, you know, authorized.
Careful.
The CEO of Shell.
There we go. Yeah. Let's talk about him.
Authorizes, you know, poor practices that lead to, like, dumpings of horrific amounts of oil and pollutants into the Amazon rainforest or whatever.
Sure.
And it becomes public knowledge. Mm-hmm. And the board says, wow, that was really bad. And they fire that CEO and they instill a new CEO. The problem's not fixed.
Yeah, right.
The problem is only fixed when they go in and remove what a previous CEO did.
Yeah.
Right? Like, that's only when it's fixed. And
when,
like,
the board puts in place practices to prevent hiring someone who's going to do the same thing again.
Yep. Yeah.
Yes. So it could be, if you're a part of this multiracial church, like, you had nothing to do with any kind of racial discrimination or anything like that, but it's not fixed until we do the work of fixing the work of people who did this beforehand.
Well, and that's what we've talked about before with the difference between systemic racism and individual, right? You don't have to be an individual who commits acts of racism to participate in systemic racism, right? That's the reality of it.
Yeah.
Or even just a benefit from systemic racism, even if you're not like an active participant, you know, you're still swimming in it.
For sure. Yeah. So I think that there's
still
kind
licking
of
that TV.
That's right. Yeah.
This is an allergy I think is catching on.
So right.
Let's bring it out there to the masses.
That's going
to
be in next year's year in review.
Well, number seven also concerns race in America and church. So for Black Americans, the Black church counters feelings of political powerlessness.
I'm with that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I think sometimes this has been brought up, of this idea of, like, occasionally sometimes like Southern Baptist conservative white churches will get very political.
Mm-hmm.
And people like myself will say, like, I don't think that's right. Yeah. I don't think you should be doing that.
Cut it out.
Right. Like, that is not helpful to the evangelism in the United States.
Yeah.
It's not helpful to kind of like your brothers and sisters around the world. Even if you believe that personally, by getting that political, it really is starting to alienate quite a few people.
Yeah.
And sometimes the pushback is, but the Black church is very political.
Never done it for a long time.
Yeah. And so I think this is kind of like saying, like, but why? Right. Yeah. Like, but why is the Black church so political? Why at a Black church can there be, like, after church, let's all go to the polls together, or high level of, like, let's get everybody here at church registered to vote, you know, things like that. So this is kind of an answer of why that the Black community compared to white community feels less powerful in the political arena.
Sure.
They feel like less heard, less represented, less engaged, and that by being a part of a church community that is active, it takes away that feeling of powerlessness.
Yeah.
And I think that's pretty powerful. There you go.
I mean, that makes sense. That was the whole movement behind, now I'm going to forget the name of it.
Yeah.
The organization that Dr. Martin Luther King was in charge of. This is great podcasting.
Yeah, there you go. Yes.
I think we get it.
That was the whole movie. I mean, the Civil Rights Act was led by pastors and by churches. Yeah. And, you know, by bringing the people together around a common vision, not just of what God had in store for them individually, but what God corporately had in store for them as part of this country that we call the United States, that there was more that was in store, that what was in place was not in line with God's vision for humanity. And so as a church, they had a responsibility to work towards that. Mm-hmm. I think one of the issues that I tend to have with white evangelical churches that are getting political is that I don't feel like the things they're advocating for are necessarily advocating for things that are in line with God's vision. Sometimes they are, but many times they cross this boundary of, like, well, we believe in this and this. I'm like, okay, I can get along with this. And we believe in that. I'm like, whoa, hold on.
Pump the brakes.
On.
Yeah.
And so my issue is typically less about should they be political or not, and more about do I agree with the political stance they're taking or not. Yeah. But with the Black, like, I don't need to have 100 people with me to feel safe in order to go vote. And historically, that was the case. Like, you needed to go en masse so that you could be safe, so that you could vote without being harassed or without being, you know, threatened. And, you know, so those numbers absolutely historically have been a big part of that. And
Yeah. So they're drawing from 1996. This is, you know, polling went out, and
that was 25 years ago.
That's when it comes to politics, do Black adults feel generally powerless? 61% agreed with that statement.
Mm-hmm.
And they agreed to this poll here in 2020. Now they added agree strongly and agree somewhat.
Mm-hmm.
And those two statements are larger than was in 1996. So agree strongly is, like, smaller, but when you add agree somewhat, you know, it's actually bigger. Yeah. So, yeah, there you go. And I think ultimately, if you're engaged in a, you know, Black church, you feel a little more powerful in the political arena.
Yeah.
So there you go.
I personally think churches should be doing voting drives. I think more churches should be advocating people get registered to vote and participate in democracy. That's important.
Yeah. Mm.
I don't know that churches should be standing up and saying, this is what you should vote for.
Yeah, that's how you use your vote. Yeah.
But there should not be a problem with churches saying, hey, here's how you participate in democracy.
Yeah. I agree.
We're going to skip 8 just real quick. Number 9 also has to do with black church, but we're not going to talk about this one at all.
Okay.
Because it's 41% of black churchgoers favor a hybrid church future. And I'm going to say, I have no ability to engage with this statement at any level.
Yeah.
Like, so.
But cool.
Cool. So number 8 and number 10, I have to deal with Gen Z. Gen Zers.
Yep. Coming up behind us.
Yep. So how Gen Z approaches evangelism.
Okay.
Mm. Yeah. Basically, they like letting your actions speak versus using words.
Going old school. Yeah. I like it.
Yeah. There you go. Any other thoughts on Gen Z approaching evangelism?
For once, Gen Z and I agree on something. Right, so there we go. That's good.
That's nice.
Yeah. So live a good life. Try to do your best.
Is that like the theory is like, oh, if you just live a good life, that's enough without having like any real core beliefs behind having living a good life? Because that's a little bit more troubling.
I think honestly.
They probably have core beliefs.
Well, I think honestly.
I mean, I think they have core beliefs, right. But like, do they care what those core beliefs are as long as you're living a good life? Like, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
Well, I think that this is a troubling for Gen Z and also for, I think, most of us. Because like we think like, oh, I'll just live a good life. That's evangelism. But guess what? My atheist neighbors also live a good life. Mm-hmm. Sometimes a better one. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's not like, so me being nice to like people isn't really like, oh, they're nice. Mm-hmm. What's driving that? Like, let me ask them questions about their faith. I don't think that really actually happens. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Unless you are extraordinarily nice.
Right.
Like, you have to be an extreme actions to get that to get to that place where people want to ask you what you believe. Mm-hmm. But being a good tipper, being waving people in on the freeway,
right.
You know, like, that's just not enough.
Clearly
like,
a Christian.
Look at this Jesus follower. Right. I want to know more.
Jesus freak. I have an opinion about this.
Okay.
I think that integrity is the key piece of that. I think that if you let your spiritual life and your social life and everything all be integrated together, then that is the more important piece of living a good life and letting your actions speak.
So you think that what Gen Z is saying is that it's more important to have integrity in the way you live and the way you claim to live than it is to be able to recite the first 10 books of the Bible.
I would like to hope that that's what Gen Z is saying.
Yeah. We'll give them the benefit of the doubt. Sure.
I think that's the best version of that, is I am publicly a Christian. That is not deniable.
Like, I'm not hiding it. I speak about it because it's part of my life, you know.
And I follow up on that by living to the tenets of the worldview that I have.
Mm-hmm.
And I show that out to the world. Yep. So if I say, I'm living a Christian life and I'm kind to people, especially those who can give me nothing in return, that should be a motivator to people to see, like, that's what a Christian looks like and how they act in the world. If I'm just being kind to people without that added element of, like, it's obvious that I'm a believer in Jesus, I don't think just being nice and good is really enough, personally.
Right.
Because atheists are nice and good.
Yeah.
Muslims, well, I mean, it's fine. It's just, I don't think it counts for like evangelism.
Yeah, I just don't think that's going to get you anywhere in terms of evangelism.
Right.
It's how you should live your life. But like, hey, Jewish people, they're nice and good. Muslims, they're nice and good.
Yeah.
Atheists, they're nice and good. You know, so like.
Penguins, they're nice and good.
I mean, there's jerks obviously in every demographic, but like.
Are you saying the penguins are evangelists?
For penguins. They want everybody to be a penguin.
Right.
Yeah. It's too cold.
Yeah. Quitter.
Not for you.
Not for me.
Yeah. Some penguins live at like the equator.
Yeah.
That's true. Some of them are in Australia.
When you think penguin, you know, I don't think those penguins. I think cold. Like, when you go see penguins at SeaWorld.
I don't know what the penguin version of racism is.
It's a cold room. It's a cold room. All right, I've seen March of the Penguins. It's cold. All right. All right. What makes an engaging witness as defined by Gen Z? So this is number 10. So number 9 was basically like, be nice. That's what we think.
Cool.
Now, like, when you are a witness, what makes you good at it?
Uh-huh.
So when you are talking about your faith, what makes you good at it, according to Gen Z? Number 1, you want to guess?
What makes you good at being a witness?
Not being judgmental.
The way you live your life, your actions.
Listens without judgment. That is number 1. That basically Gen Z Christians who talk about their faith, and non-Christian Gen Z all list as number 1, listens without judgment. Is kind of the most important aspect of like talking about your faith, which is kind of interesting that listening is number 1 when it comes to talking about your faith. Anything to learn about that?
I'm apparently a really good evangelist, according to Gen Z.
So you listen cool. without judging?
I do.
Good for you.
It's a, you know, talent.
It's not bragging on there you anywhere. Know,
it's there was, hard to not judge sometimes, all right?
There sure, was a little yeah. judgment on Taste the TV, okay? Yeah.
I just throwing out always there. Listen without judgment.
I feel like your face gives you away sometimes.
Yeah. Wow. I feel like your face gives you
away. I'm just saying. You've made some faces.
At times in which I was expected to make judgment on things, not like while I'm doing pastoral care with right. people or that's evangelizing
true. I
them.
I have no personal experience with pastoral care with you, so.
Yeah. But I think this is an important, especially Gen Z, least church generation thus far.
Yep.
So like, it can always get worse, everybody.
That's right.
Like,
Gen AA giving them a run for their money. I don't know.
Yeah, whatever comes after Gen Z could be worse. Right. But listening without judgment is what they all kind of agree. Like, this is the best way to actually have faithful conversations is to start listening to what our world around us believes.
I like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Can I just point out really quickly that it's really weird that whoever named Generations decided to start at X?
Yeah. Like, what were they thinking? Like,
yeah, you've only got Y and Z to come after that. Where are you going to go next? What's your plan here?
And we skipped Y.
It's terrible.
So like,
this whole system.
We could have gone back to Y, but we didn't.
X millennial Z. Yeah.
Well, greatest generation, which, come on.
Yeah.
A little braggy. Boomers.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's because there were a lot of them.
A lot of, yeah, right. The baby boom was mm-hmm. real. Gen X, yeah, the forgotten generation, and then millennials.
Yeah,
that's fine. I'm fine with it because you know who boomers hate? Millennials. You know who millennials hate? Boomers. We're just sticking
you're just in the middle.
In the middle. That nobody cares.
Don't look at us.
Because when we out. Were 6 years old, mom and dad went to work, and you're like, "Oh, you're sick. Put on Sesame Street. You're fine."
Right.
I'm just gonna hang out, collect my Social Security till it runs out. Because mm-hmm. Gen X, the last generation that gets it. So
look, it happens. Yeah. There you go. So that's the year in review.
All right.
According to Barna.
According to Barna, 2021 was all right.
Yeah, it was a hard year for many people.
Yep. Many people had a hard time.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Other people learned new things.
Yep.
Yeah.
Some people talked about Jesus.
Some people are listening about Jesus.
That and is the what three of us are still here.
And marginally successful.
Right. Yes.
You know, we're still producing content. Do we have more or less listeners? Who's to say?
Right.
Who could click on that button on the website to know how we're doing?
No. Who could?
It's possible. Right. I'm not sure I want to know. So, right. Like, blissful ignorance.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
against my this witness philosophy.
I see. We started this in 2018.
So this is, I think, episode like 170 something.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we will hit 200 episodes this year.
Yeah.
So that means at that point we started 4 years prior. So
there you go. We're coming for you, Seinfeld.
Are we going to get syndicated?
Well, technically, once you
I'm more meant in like the number of episodes. Oh.
I know in TV syndication, once you get to 100, you
get like a special episode.
The syndication happens when you hit 100.
Oh, that's what it takes.
So we're there.
Okay.
Wow.
And I think we might actually have 170. We might be more than Seinfeld.
I don't know. I mean, they had like 9 seasons.
Yeah, but they're only making like 20
to
30
episodes a season. I know. I was doing
the
math in my head.
So yeah,
know.
Like we're getting close.
Yeah, we're
at. We're coming for you, whatever has more. Yeah. Whatever TV, so. Right. I think it's SportsCenter actually has the most.
Well, that's not fair. They're on every day.
Okay. All right. Close us out.
That's like saying, oh, the evening news has more episodes. Right. Okay. Thanks a lot.
The weather.
I'm saying.
All right. Hey, if you liked this episode or any of our other content in this year or any of the past years, we would love for you to share this with your friends, family, with your Gen Z friends, with your Gen Z atheists, whoever it is that's out there that you think needs a nice helping of our ability to listen without judgment and to talk about faith.
Yeah.
Did I drive that thoroughly into the ground? Excellent. You can find us at Beyond Sunday Podcast at Gmail. No, you can find us at BeyondSundayPodcast.com, or you can email us at BeyondSundayPodcast@gmail.com. I'm out of practice. This is rough.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, Lord.
And we're back.
Yes.
Or
happy
if you
2022.
Know Will Arnett.
Yeah.
Right.
For sure.
Yeah.
If you know Will Arnett, Simone Biles, any of the other celebs out there that we'd love to have.
Really, we take anybody, I think, at this point.
Sure.
Right?
D-listers.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
What's that one?
You know Mattress Mac? Get him on here.
I would talk to Mattress Mac. Yeah, he seems like he's got some energy. He's
me too, yeah. Or any other, I'm trying to think of any other, like, who are the D-est of D-list Houston celebrities?
I don't know. There's got to be, like, some backup to a backup on the Houston Rockets or something like that. Yeah.
That's true. Yeah. That's true. Yeah. There you go.
We should start sending some emails.
Who's the backup kicker for the Texans? That's got to be a thing.
Yeah. J.J. Watt's no longer here, so that's the only Texans player I could name.
Yeah.
And he no longer plays with them, so.
Effective, yeah.
You're welcome.
Okay, are we done with the sports?
Do you have another comment?
Sports talk.
Sports ball. Yes, I believe it's on every Sunday.
Some of it is. Okay. Some of it's on other days.
Sure.
Usually on most Sundays, there is a sports thing, I think.
Yeah.
And with every other day of the week. So, wrap it up. All right, thanks for listening, everybody. We'll be back next week with more Beyond Sunday.